does have it all. All of our pre-owned vehicles are Hubler Q certified, which include a 128-point vehicle inspection, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and two warranties. A two-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, and a 30-day, 1,000-mile comprehensive warranty. Visit any of our 13 locations today, or click drivehubler.com. Hubler has it all.
It's the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy on 93.5 and 107.5. The Fan.
Shot clock is off. Indiana down a point at Madison Square Garden. Turner will be called for an offensive foul on the screen.
That is shocking. You never see that call at this point in the game. Wow. I mean, never.
DiVincenzo hit the deck, sold it.
That is a great acting job. A lot of great actors here in New York City. You see them on Broadway all the time. That's as good an acting job as you'll see.
You know, just in my experience in this league, I think it's the best when the players decide the outcome of the game. I think it's unfortunate that, you know, it happened. You know, we reviewed it. They still called it a legal, you know, legal screen, but it's the playoffs, man. I think I feel like DiVincenzo did a good job of selling it. And, you know, for the most part, you can't leave the game to be decided by the refs.
Sitting on 40. Kicks it, DiVincenzo. Three-pointer. Down it goes. Dante DiVincenzo puts the Knicks up three.
The boards were a big problem in the second half. Fouls were a problem in the second half. And, you know, you allow a team to score with the clock stopped and don't do a good job with possession. And we had turnovers as well. So those are three pretty big factors. You know, that said, we did a lot of good things throughout the game, but this is one we're going to have to learn from.
And I think of crime when I'm in a New York state of mind.
Hicks get kicked in the you-know-what. Don't think I need to finish that rhyme for you. Just a brutal missed opportunity last night by the Indiana Pacers, officiating beyond head-scratching as well. Good Tuesday morning to you. Storms in the Indy area all day long. Very fitting for how that one ended last night. I'm Kevin Bowen, Mark Dykton on that opening montage. Andy Sweeney alongside Rick Carlisle, 9 o'clock. How about Brian Windhorst from ESPN joining us here very early, coming up at 7:15. Andy Sweeney, I think Tyrese Halliburton probably is pretty happy about the officiating storyline dominating the exit from game one last night.
Well, yeah, a good morning to you guys. And, you know, KB came in here and said, I woke up at 3 a.m. and I saw that Carlisle was good today. And I was thinking, boy, you had a long night. I understand.
Didn't have
that
a Rick
was.
Carlisle text on the phone at 1:48 a.m. Well, but boy. Nonetheless, he will join us at 9 for those that saw the back and forth on Twitter last night. 9 o'clock for Rick Carlisle.
Yeah,
today.
So 9 o'clock for Rick Carlisle. Like you said, Brian Windhorst coming up here. And just a deflating loss last night. A game you had within reach, you had it in your grasp, and then, you know, bleep happens from the ref to you do some of that stuff. And I tell you, just right off the top, KB, you know, for me, what makes this just so disappointing is for large parts of the game, it felt like the Pacers had the Knicks playing right into their hands.
1,000%.
Yes. I mean, you wanted this game to be up and down. You wanted to, you know, with them not having a bench, you wanted their starters to log massive minutes where they're running up and down the floor, and you really got that. And, you know, in a long series, and this would be the second thing, in a long series, you hope it's a long series, right? You want to tire them out as you go this series. And if you could have got the win last night, that goes a long way to making the Knicks have to play another game where their starters are playing high 40 minutes. But refs, Halliburton, the end of the game, questionable calls, Rick Carlisle at 9 o'clock. It's a loaded Tuesday morning for us.
Yeah, these opportunities, they just don't grow on trees in the playoffs. Up 9, early fourth quarter, your bench was outstanding. It's going to get lost in the shuffle, understandably, today. McConnell and Toppin, I can't say enough good things about them. I mean, hell, Ben Shepherd and Isaiah Jackson, I thought, gave you, for the most part, pretty quality minutes. And for you then to see it all wilt away in the fourth quarter, deflating is probably the right word to use that you just used, Andy. Again, it's a kick in the you-know-what. And Tyrese Halliburton, I'm just so disappointed in his effort, frankly. you cannot have your $200 million guy vanish, side of the milk carton, be a ghost
No one else vanished last night except for him.
In that moment. And you can look at a multitude of things. It's, you know, the Pacers played nine guys last night. You know, some would balk at playing nine. Tyrese Haliburton had the fewest points of those nine guys. Who had Isaiah Jackson scoring more points than Tyrese Haliburton going into last night? He takes six shot attempts. If you look at Haliburton this season, he's played 76 games, 75 of them he's had more shot attempts than that. The only one was when he got hurt, the night he got carried off the floor against Boston after a dozen minutes. And just look at Jalen Brunson in the fourth quarter and look at Tyrese Haliburton. Again, an absolute disappearing act from Haliburton. I guess I can't say disappearing because he had two massive turnovers in the course of that fourth quarter. And Brunson with really one of the most impressive fourth quarters you're going to see. That, to me, is the dominant storyline exiting Game 1. It'll be three new officials coming up in Game 2, so that one will just naturally simmer. Haliburton ain't going anywhere, and if he doesn't flip a switch real quick, we'll be talking about the Pacers heading to Cancun real quick.
Yeah, we'll be doing the 1-2-3 Cancun. You know, I will say that because of the officiating at the end of the game, and I want to kind of look at officiating a little bit before that, but because KB of officiating at the end of this game, there are things that are going to be overshadowed, and we will get to officiating. We'll get to what Miles Turner and Rick Carlisle said coming up as we go today. But it needs to be said. I mean, our guy Eddie Garrison tweeted it out. You know, Tyrese Haliburton, the last 40 minutes of the game, he took three shots. He took two in the second quarter, one shot in the third quarter, and didn't take one in the fourth quarter. And I'm not, you know, as that lead evaporates, and it was a 9-point lead a couple minutes into the fourth quarter, Jalen Brunson comes into the game. There's no surprise that the Knicks were going to make a run, right? I mean, come on. You know, anyone's going to make a run there. You know, a team with Jalen Brunson and what they have built around him is going to make a run. And as the time is ticking down and Haliburton's not doing anything, you know, you mentioned the couple turnovers near the end of the game. I'm thinking, you know, Rick Carlisle sitting there tonight, this is last night, thinking, should I put T.J. McConnell in the game?
Yep.
Should I pull Tyrese Haliburton? Now, I can understand why he didn't. You know, you play all these games. You win a first-round series. You know, you played over, 90 games, whatever it is, this season, that you're going to stick with your $200 million man. But Tyrese Haliburton last night was the only no-show. I mean, Ananobi wasn't a no-show. Brunson, Hart, DiVincenzo, guys on your team. Obi Toppin.
I swear there were nine Josh Harts on the floor last
night. He's unbelievable, isn't he? Obi Toppin, Isaiah Jackson, TJ McConnell. All those guys stepped up. Ben Shepherd came in limited action and knocked down a couple threes. And I am to the point, having seen him after the injury and having seen him in the postseason, you go into these games and you don't expect Tyrese Haliburton to put up a big scoring effort. You just don't do it. I mean, we can sit here, we can yell and scream about it. He didn't do it with any consistent basis in the Milwaukee series, and I'm not considering that he's going to be scoring much more than 15, 16 points, and obviously last night he scored six. He took, six shots, and it's just not good enough. It's not good enough.
You know, welcome to being a star. You get graded more critically in the game's biggest moments. Quarterbacks, we do it quite often, Andy. What happens in 2 minutes? What happens in the fourth quarter? With star players in the NBA, it's what do you do in the clutch? The organ is pounding in the arena. The game naturally slows down. How do you handle that? And Jalen Brunson last night with 21 points in the fourth quarter, the assist to Dante DiVincenzo, and Tyrese Haliburton. Again, I'd like to say he totally disappeared in the fourth quarter. That would be totally overlooking the massive turnovers that he also committed there late in that game. He rocked the Quentin Nelson jersey on the plane. He played basketball like Quentin Nelson. Nothing against Quentin Nelson's basketball game. But that's what he looked like to me. And just hesitancy. Scared. Scared, such a big word to use. Like, just a total not wanting to be in that moment, that setting. I'm going to try and make a play here for you. Deferring so much. And you can't have that. You know, Haliburton certainly has an unbelievable kind of quarterback mindset, get others involved, but there's a time and place for all of that. And when the game slows down in the fourth quarter and Pascal Siakam is having a very up and down night, you can't afford to have that. So to me, the officiating is going to be such a huge storyline all morning long.
And it was bad.
And it was bad. Yeah, very bad.
It was very bad.
So many missed calls there late that you needed the reviews to try and help you out, and not all of them did. And we'll get into that moving screen and all of it. But just, I can't get over Halliburton and just the disappearing act.
And I just can't get over, you know, they had the Knicks playing their style for so long.
You got the game at your pace.
You got the game at your
pace. Your bench on the road, so good.
I know. I know. I've had this internal conflict. I think they're going to be here for the smoke this series, but that doesn't mean that last night wasn't an absolute heartbreaker for the Pacers. All right, so what we're going to do here, we're going to break early. Brian Windhorst can come on at 7:15. You're going to see him on all the ESPN shows today. He's up early with us. We'll talk with him next. Wake up call on this Tuesday. Reacting with you, Brian Windhorst, next, 93.5.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
107.5 The Fan.
Our normal Tuesday segments with Rick Carlisle coming up 9 o'clock this morning. So 9 a.m. for the Pacers head coach. I thought, honestly, a little bit tamer postgame than I thought. He's never been one, I think, to totally rip the officiating, but he's done it in some indirect ways. But for the most part, pretty tame last night from Rick Carlisle postgame. Again, he'll join us at 9. Let's head to the Payless Liquors right now. Cannot thank him enough for this early rise on this Tuesday morning. You obviously see him all over ESPN, the Hoop Collective, one of my favorite podcast listens as well. He is Brian Windhorst from ESPN. Brian, good morning. Thanks for the time, man.
Good morning. Yeah, I think Rick actually took some time last night to decide how he was going to play it. He, before he came in to talk to us in the postgame, he watched the video, lots of video at the end of the game. And I think he made a calculated decision to play it cool last night. I was also very interested in how he would do it.
What did you see transpire there in the fourth quarter? You can throw officiating in there if you'd like. 9-point lead with 10 minutes to go, and it just kind of slowly wilted away.
Yeah, so first off, the call's wrong. The referee, Zach Zarba, who in my view is top two or three best crew chiefs in the NBA, admits clearly to the media after the game that they got it wrong. And I know that the call I'm talking about is a kickball.
Now, right. Mm-hmm.
You can go round and around about the screen. I believe when the 2-minute report comes out today that they're going to uphold that screen as being legal. That does not mean it should have been called there. That's the debate. But technically, by the letter of the law, I think that screen was legal. It was brutal to do it in that moment, and it just stripped the Pacers a chance to really win the game there. I mean, they got the ball 12 seconds left. They can, I don't remember what was on the shot clock, but they can almost hold for one. Brutal. But the killer play is the play that they just got dead wrong. Not only because it gives the Knicks a second chance, and they hit a three that basically decides the game, but because it was going to be a fast break. Neesmith got a steal. They were going to be fast breaking the other way with a game tied. So it's almost, it's a 5-point swing. It's a 5-point swing in a tie game with 40 seconds left. It's heartbreaking. Now, I hate blaming officiating for losses. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I don't tolerate it. But if the Pacers fans want to blame the officiating for the loss, I'm not going to stop them. What I would say is the bigger issue for the series is that they can't let Brunson be this efficient. They're not going to be able to stop Brunson, because I'm telling you, I don't think Nembhard or even Neesmith can stay in front of him. He's on top of his game. He's going to get in the lane. He's going to score. What the Pacers players were talking about last night, and Rick too, and I suspect when he comes on with you in a while, he'll say the same thing. They can't let him get 14 free throws. And yeah, you can complain about a couple of the calls, but they were fouling him. And he's an expert at drawing fouls. They were fouling him. And you also can't allow Dante DiVincenzo to go 8 of 10 in the second half. You know, the Pacers should win this game most of the time. They shoot 53%. They only have 8 turnovers. They shot relatively well from three-point range. It wasn't their greatest three-point game, obviously, but in that setting, she shot 39%. That's pretty good. They score 117 points in the Garden. They should win that game. The reason they didn't was because of that call and because Brunson was allowed to get 14 free throws. And he, you know, he can, you can let him score 43 points. I'm telling you, you can survive it. But you can't score, you can't survive him scoring 43 points on 26 shots. It's got to be 43 points on 36 shots. Let us all brag about him scoring 40 points. Let him have 49 points. Let him have 52. Can't be efficient. That's what the Pacers have to clean up between now and tomorrow night.
Brian, I thought you laid it out pretty well from an officiating standpoint there, specifically with the kick ball. Like you said, Zach Zarbin admitted after the game it was a wrong call, but it also cannot be reviewed. This is more of an NBA ruling question. We review so much gray area. Why can't kick balls be reviewed? Do you know that?
You can ask me questions about the review situation for the next hour. I'm not going to be able to have answers for you. Yeah. I don't understand why the Brunson call was overturned. I don't understand this marginal contact stuff. I don't have answers for you.
Brian Windhorst with us. Yeah, the marginal contact where Jalen Brunson jumped into Miles Turner. Yeah. Yes, marginal contact, still contact. But Brian joins us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. You know, really one of the only guys that didn't show up last night, he played 36 minutes, was Tyrese Haliburton. He took just six shots. He had just 6 points. How worrisome is it that in the playoffs, it doesn't seem like the Pacers are getting the Tyrese Haliburton that they got for the most part in the regular season?
Well, it's pretty much defining their team at this point. And I just wonder how much the hamstring and now the back injury are affecting him, because he took one shot inside the paint last night. One. And, you know, he did have 8 assists. You know, he had 4 steals. He was trying to affect the game, but and, I mean, he doesn't need to average 30 for the Pacers to win. They have firepower on this offense, obviously. But he's a shell of the player he was. I've been to 4 Pacers games this year, and he's a shell of the player that he was in December. And I don't know why, and I don't know if he's going to give the answer why. I'm not educated enough on how he's played every single day to give a true analysis answer. I can speculate that, with the injury, he was so worried about making all the All-NBA team that he rushed it back. I'm speculating. I don't know for sure. I just know that since he did the split, he hasn't been the same player. And I watched him do his pregame warm-up last night, and he just looked ginger. He just looked real ginger. And so it's not manly, and it's not like competitive to complain about injuries, but there's just no way he can be himself. There's just no way.
Again, ESPN's Brian Windhorst. You certainly see him all over their airwaves and hear him. Again, the Hoop Collective podcast, a great, great listen from Brian Windhorst and others there on the ESPN platforms, and Windhorst joins us now. Brian, if you look at the Jalen Brunson-Rick Carlisle dynamic, you guys have talked about this on the podcast, but maybe for our local audience that's unfamiliar with more of the Dallas background, I'd venture to guess, while the public comments could be very positive right now, this probably means a little bit more to Jalen Brunson, considering the coach on the other sideline.
Yeah, he'll never admit it, but, you know, there's a long list of people that Jalen wants to prove wrong, and Rick Carlisle's at the top of the list. And look, I want to be clear. You know, there was a lot, you know, the Knicks drafted Obi Toppin in the top 10 and celebrated it that night like they'd smashed a grand slam on the night when Brunson went 33rd. So, you know, and I know it was a different front office, but like, it's not like the Knicks like always knew that Jalen Brunson was going to be this dominant player. But Rick, you know, played him like a second round pick in Dallas. And specifically, his last year, right before he left the job, he didn't play him much in the back end of the playoff series. That they, you know, I think he played 10 minutes in the game 7, his last game. And obviously, he's not a 10-minute player. He tried to trade him. I mean, obviously, it's been told a lot in since he got to Indy that he badly wanted to trade for Tyrese Halliburton when he was with the Mavericks. Well, one of the players he was offering up for him was Jalen Brunson. He was trying to get teams in the top, 10, to take a draft pick and Jalen Brunson. And all of those teams, the teams that passed on Brunson 32 times, those teams that had no interest in trading up for him, it's not like there's a short list of people that didn't believe in Jalen Brunson. And but definitely Rick, didn't make him the true co-star to Luka. And, I think Jalen will never forget that. And I also think Tyrese Halliburton making the Team USA over Jalen bothers him. Now, I covered Team USA last year. I was with them for a month. I fell in love with the Halliburton family during that time overseas. And Jalen and Tyrese got along great. There's no personal animosity. And I even understand why Team USA went with Tyrese, because Jalen was not good last year for Team USA. And Team USA, when you have all that talent, all that dribbling, doesn't always relate. But if you're Jalen Brunson and you thrive on slights, you're looking across the way and you're seeing a guy who got picked on Team USA with 6 points last night. You had 43. You're looking at the guy who didn't play you in a playoff game. You've scored 40 in four straight playoff games. I mean, you don't have to be you don't have to invent things here to get motivation.
Yeah, there's nobody playing better basketball right now than Jalen Brunson. Brian Windhorst from ESPN joining us here on the Wake Up Call on this Tuesday on the Payless Liquors Hotline. I've been battling, and the answer is it's probably both of these, Brian, but I've been battling with, if you're a Pacer fan, you wake up this morning demoralized, letting an opportunity, a golden opportunity, slip through your fingers, or do you look at it and say, boy, we came to play, we can wear them down, Halliburton's not going to be this bad. It sure looked like the Pacers were there for the smoke last night for the series. So do you look at it that way, glass half full or glass half empty, or is it probably, Brian, somewhere in the middle?
Yeah, so first off, the Pacers players last night were immediately talking about, look, game one in Milwaukee lost and didn't kill them, obviously. And I thought they handled the situation beautifully last night. And the advantage that they have on the bench is huge. 46-3 in bench scoring. Now, it's not going to be that way for every game, obviously, but they've got some stuff going for them. But they need Tyrese to play better. And I'm not sure that Tyrese, he's got to play better than this. I'm not saying that Tyrese's got to go, blow for blow with Jalen. But they need Tyrese to play better. If Tyrese can summon it, they got a real shot here. I would say they shot 52% against a good defense, only 8 turnovers, and one of them was at the very end where Tyrese thought there was a guy in the corner for the three, and he just got confused. He was down 4, needed a three, and I'm not even going to count that one. So really, in my mind, it was 7 turnovers. They played pretty clean, efficient basketball. I'm not sure they're going to be able to do that. I don't think they're going to maybe routinely put up 117 on the Knicks, especially in the Garden. So you kind of regret that, and TJ was great again, and I mean, if the game had gone the way I thought it was, I was going to spend 10 minutes today talking about Obi Toppin going between his legs.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
I mean, that was a jaw-dropping moment for about 10 reasons, including the fact that he's botched that dunk a few times this year, including in the Garden. But he obviously gave a huge lift. There's reason to believe in that. But the separation between Halliburton and Brunson, again, I'm not expecting Halliburton to score like Jalen. That can't be. It can't be, with Brunson generating that many points, both off passes and shots, that efficient, and Tyrese going 2 of 6. And I think Tyrese would obviously admit that.
Yeah, it was jarring, frankly, to watch the discrepancy between those two in the fourth quarter last night. Brian, can't thank you enough. Absolutely love your work all over ESPN. Again, like I said, the Hoop Collective, an awesome, awesome listen for NBA fans out there. Safe travels throughout the playoffs, man. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Take care, guys.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
All right, on the line right now, and again, we greatly appreciate his time continuing here on these Tuesday mornings throughout the playoffs. He is the head coach of the Indiana Pacers. Rick Carlisle joins us now. Rick, 9-point lead early fourth quarter last night. What did you see transpire from there in one that got away from you guys?
Well, the fourth quarter was certainly the decisive quarter. One of the patterns that New York has shown in the playoffs in the Philadelphia series again last night is that as the game goes along, their assaults on the offensive boards become stronger, more focused. You know, the ball ends up in Brunson's hands and in isolation, and they play very well off of what he's doing, and they just go and retrieve the ball. And you know, after a pretty good start to the game, a pretty decent first half, you know, in the blockout department, we fell short in the second half. That was a big part of it. Our game plan discipline has to be better. We've got to foul less. I mentioned the blockouts. We got to do a better job there. And then, you know, offensively, we've got to continue to move the ball. We became stagnant. That became a problem, and we paid a price.
You took the high road last night talking about the officiating. You just mentioned we've got to foul less right there. Why do you feel like that approach is the way to go when obviously there's a ton of conversation about that here on this Tuesday morning?
Well, you know, what's the point of creating a huge distraction within our team about the officials? I mean, we've got to control the things that we can control. I mean, you're on the road. Game one of the second round, you're at Madison Square Garden. You know that you've got to play hard, you've got to play the right way, and you've got to have a very focused effort, and you cannot get into distractions about officiating or things that can distract you from doing your job within the team. And so, listen, you know, that stuff will take care of itself if we do the things that we're supposed to do. You know, we had too many times in the second half where we gambled defensively and lost or gambled and missed. We gave at least two or three wide open 3-point shots to DiVincenzo. You know, we had a couple times where we made a really good play offensively on the break and then, you know, got involved in too much of a celebration and they were in an answer back mode and we gave up another three, you know? And so, you know, this is, you know, these are the realities of big time playoff basketball in the high stakes world of the NBA playoffs. I mean, you've got to do your job within the team and the team has to function at a high level. And you know, we just simply have to do better at game two.
Rick Carlisle, Pacers head coach, joining us here on the Wake Up Call on this Tuesday. Again, game two coming up at 8 o'clock. Our coverage here on The Fan at 7:30. You mentioned not fouling as much, and I would imagine part of that would be Jalen Brunson, who was 14 of 14 from the line. We know he had 43 points last night. Easier said than done, but how do you slow him down a little bit better in game two, coach?
Got to be a team responsibility, a team effort. You know, there were times late in the game where we were supposed to be bringing help and we just simply didn't do it. It was loud in there. We've got to communicate better. And some of those situations, you know, he's very crafty. He's developed a great knack for creating contact. And, you know, we had our hands in the cookie jar, you know, too many times. And you know, we paid a price. I mean, you know, if you allow a guy like that to go walk to the line and shoot 14 times with the clock stopped, you know, you're creating a tremendous obstacle for yourself. So we got to do better there. And look, a lot of the opportunities that he had came off of second chance. I mean, when they go get the ball off the boards on misses, I mean, the ball inevitably, in many cases, finds its way back to him. And, you know, he's developed a real knack for converting. So, you know, it's a big picture thing. You know, our offense sets up our defense, and better offense will lead to better defense, and then we got to finish off plays defensively with rebounds.
Our Tuesday morning conversations with the head coach of the Indiana Pacers, Rick Carlisle, again tomorrow night. They've responded so well all year. They'll try to do it again, 8 o'clock from Madison Square Garden for game two. Coach, I think it's the first time all year Tyrese Haliburton has been your, I guess, the fewest points scored of anybody on the team. What did you see assertive-wise from Haliburton last night?
Yeah, I credit you guys for not making this the first question today. That's one thing. So appreciate that. We are a team, and you know, everyone needs to look at themselves through the lens of the team and what is needed for the team. And so, you know, everyone has to raise their individual level. At this time of year, you have simply got to do more. And more doesn't just mean more shots, more scoring. More means responsibilities within the defensive system, being able to sit down and contain drives when it's your job to do so. More means blockouts, going and getting the ball. There's a 50-50 ball. It's up for grabs, you know, and it's you as you and one of their guys. You know, you got to be the guy to go get that thing. And this is everybody on our team, and it includes Tyrese. And you know, that's who we've been all year. We've been a group that's been highly connected, and whose success in a great way depends on our attention to detail with our jobs related to one another. Okay, so that's where it's at. You know, that's where it's at with him and everybody else on our team.
Do you see the back injury limiting him in any way?
Everybody's dinged up this time of year. You know, it's the NBA. I mean, they had a guy play 48 minutes last night. You know, you don't think he's dinged up a little bit? I mean, this is part of everyday life in the NBA when you're playing in May. And so, I'm sure he's feeling some things. But we have a lot of guys on our roster that are feeling things right now. And we just got to simply do the best job possible we can between games to monitor everything, take care of ourselves, recharge after games. You know, we had a 3-day break after the end of the Milwaukee series to recharge. We had 2 lift days and 2 treatment days. And, you know, everybody on our team has got to take advantage of that. And then we've got to move on to game two, and we've got to do better. Everyone has to do better. Everyone has to do more.
Did you consider putting TJ McConnell back in the game later for anybody, including Haliburton? And then can you just talk about McConnell and Obi playing so great last night? We need not forget their efforts and how good they were.
Yeah, but again, you know, you're talking about 2 guys out of, you know, 15 on the roster, 17 if you count the 2 ways, or 18, whatever it is. And yeah, I mean, TJ did go in toward the end of the game. But look, we've developed a roster and a way of playing, and there's a level of trust that we have with the guys that start the game. They've been finishers for us throughout round one, and that's the way it was last night. And look, everybody simply has to do a better job in game 2. I mean, we've got to make better recognitions. We've got to make better reads. But most importantly, we've got to take on the physical battles of the rebounding and loose ball side of the game. That's where it's at in this series.
Again, 8 o'clock tomorrow night, Rick Carlisle joining us here, game 2 from Madison Square Garden before game 3. Back inside of Gainbridge Fieldhouse coming up on Friday. Appreciate Rick's time on this Tuesday morning. As you look at, I guess, all 48 minutes, is that the type of pace you would like on a nightly basis in this series?
Well, the pace of the game is going to vary from game to game. I mean, we saw that against Milwaukee. But there's a certain way we have to approach our offensive game, and we have to recognize the way New York is playing situations. And we have got to have better ball movement, more frequent ball movement, more movement of bodies, and we've got to create more problems. So that's an adjustment that we are looking at from game one to game two. But more than anything, I mean, the big adjustment is being better defensively, being better on the boards, and keeping them off the free throw line.
Rick, you guys have responded so well all year long. I mean, hell, we had you on a couple Tuesdays ago, the day of game two, and you guys responded in a major way. What qualities do you think your team possesses, why they've been so successful not letting things snowball this season?
Well, this time of year, resilience and competitive integrity are the two big things. You know, they're the two big things. And so when you have good guys that care and care about one another and compete hard, that's resilience, okay? And we're going to have to show that tomorrow night.
Rick, last one for me, and I don't know if you're on committees that talk about this stuff, but I did find it interesting after the game, and I don't know, it falls into the officiating bucket, so you might not want to touch it, but do you know why the NBA is given the rule of you can't review kick balls? It seems like there's so much gray area that is reviewed. I didn't know if you've been on a committee where that has been discussed of why kick balls specifically are not reviewable.
I've been on all the committees over the years, and it's something that is like, if you're like, when the challenge came into effect, you've got to be careful about how many things you can challenge. Otherwise, games won't end. I mean, there'll be so many things going on. And so they kept the focus of challenges more on the narrow side. I mean, there's a case that could be made for kick balls. There's a case that could be made for travels, you know, because those are both dead ball situations. But when you start expanding, you get into more and more. And look, one of the things that I think has been a big benefit is like when it was 2 or 3 years ago where the league decided not to allow the officials to just go review anything in the last 2 minutes involving out of bounds. I mean, games were being extended like 10, 15, 20 minutes, and it was never ending. A lot of people were complaining about it. And you know, the NBA just simply decided, look, our guys have got to do a better job of getting it right. And if you have a challenge that you can use in those situations, you know, go ahead and use it. And so that's been, I think, viewed as a positive change. You ask a question, and I give you an answer as to why it's more on the narrow side. Do I see it expanding as, you know, the years go on? Perhaps. But look, there's things that we got to do to keep ourselves out of harm's way and stay out of these situations at the end of the game.
Rick, we can't thank you enough. Again, I know there's a lot of things you'd rather be doing on this Tuesday morning, so appreciate you continuing to make time for us here during the playoffs. And again, as we said, you guys have responded well all year long. Hopefully that continues tomorrow night. We'll see you back here for game three inside of Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Thank you, Coach.
All right, thanks. Take care.
It's the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy on 93.5 and 107.5. The Fan.
Marcus Erickson leads to the short shoot.
Quiet swing. Quietly has made his way to the front and now a half a lap away from winning his very first Indianapolis 500. Eight car lengths as he swings low, now back high to turn three for the final time.
Marcus Erickson is snaking around. Hunter Ward and Tony Kanaan are skulking with Felix Rosenquist. Marcus Erickson with a 5 car length advantage, and the caution flag has come out due to an incident in turn number two, Mark.
Yellow flag is out with Marcus Erickson in front, Davey Hamilton.
Marcus Erickson was going to win this race anyways. He did just what he had to do. Unbelievable job that he did on that restart, keeping Pato Ward behind him. Checkers are out. Erickson's your winner.
Marcus Erickson flies under the twin checkers, and he has achieved racing immortality. He wins the 106th running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race.
'Cause I'm TNT, I'm dynamite. TNT.
Well, we have never needed a break more in our lives here from the Pacers chatter on this Tuesday morning. And why not do it with certainly one of the finest racers around that oval here over the last couple of years? That radio call, courtesy of the IndyCar Radio Network, Marcus Erickson joins us now. He is Andretti IndyCar driver, the number 28 Delaware Life Honda, and Marcus on the Payless Liquors Hotline with us. Marcus, good morning, man. Month of May alive and well?
Yeah, good morning. It's okay, but I am still pissed off about last night as well. I watched the game. I was on my sofa screaming, and then that ending was, that was BS. I don't like it.
Now, Marcus, if my eyes weren't deceiving me, that was you, right? And Connor Daly and maybe Christian Lundgaard, front row of game six. Did I see that correctly?
Yeah, that was correct. And that was like the best game ever. It was like a workout for me. I was jumping up and down all game. That was so much fun. And then, I was very excited last night to watch a game, and they played so well. And then that ending was just, I felt bad.
Marcus, I've always enjoyed our conversations, and we appreciate this time here. And you can sense a yeah, but coming here. I must say, I was a little disappointed in you in Game Six. And now, me giving you fashion advice would be like me telling Whitney Houston how to sing. no gold shirt on during Game Six.
Yeah, no, I have my Pacers hat. I have my Pacers hat on like now, like when we're doing this interview. But I promise you, next game I'll have my Pacers shirt as well.
Yeah, Marcus, you need to know, KB, Kevin Bowen just, next to me, he scolds everyone for not putting the team-issued gold shirt on.
I was calling out Connor Daly, but okay, the Pacers hat, all right, that can justify for it, all right?
Well, the Pacers won the game, too, so.
There you go.
So you said you were jumping up and down, so you were dialed in. Well, do some sports talk radio for us here. What did you think of the end? What did you think of the officiating? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, that call on Turner was, that happens all the time. I don't know basketball very good, I should say that. But that call for me at that time of the game, I know enough sport that's very controversial, right? And I just feel bad because they played so well. And I feel like, both teams should play it out, and the referees shouldn't be the ones that decide it. And that's what it felt like, at least for me. So,
Marcus Erickson with us, Andretti IndyCar driver of the number 28 Delaware Life Honda. I asked this not to totally go back to last year with you, but when there is an official, whenever there is a rule or an official that is involved, whether it be you, it be in any other sport, or be with the Pacers last night, I mean, there's nothing you can do, right? It's an empty feeling. I would have to imagine it's a hopeless feeling as well.
Yeah, it was a bit deja vu to last year at Indy 500. That is true, actually. Yeah, it's tough. When you do everything right and you feel like it's stuff outside your control, it's definitely those ones are hard to swallow and hard to get over. But a good thing for the Pacers, they play again, tomorrow, so they just have to win it back. I get my chance again this year in May, for the 500. So I'm fired up about that.
Marcus, how many times have you gone back and watched the final, 5 to 10 laps from last year, if at all?
And I haven't watched it, to be honest. I'm not sure if I can. I haven't watched it yet, actually. I'll keep it like that.
I'd assume it still pisses you off how that was ended, how it was officiated, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, it was just hard. It was hard for me because I felt like I'd won it, and then something that's never happened in the history of the race over 100 years, they just decided to do something very differently. And it was only a couple of years ago that Sato won on a yellow, and TK won on a yellow. There's a lot of guys that's won on yellows, and I do appreciate that we try and give the fans a show, and I think that's a great thing. But I think to just do it a bit out of the blue was a bit hard, especially when you put yourself in a position to win it. So, but it's history now. It is what it is. It's been a good motivation for me to work even harder than ever to be as prepared as I can be for this year and try and win it back this year instead.
He hails from Sweden, of course, the winner of the 2022 Indianapolis 500, now with Andretti, driver of the number 28 Delaware Life Honda, Marcus Erickson on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Marcus, we see moves of guys to various teams in a lot of sports. Can you kind of take a peek behind the curtain with us and just what is it like and what has it been like making such a notable move
here this season with Andretti Racing?
Yeah, it's a big change. You know, I was 4 years with Ganassi, so it's definitely been a bit of a process to get to know all the new people. It's a new car, even though, you know, it's an Indy car, but it's just, you know, they set it up differently to what I'm used to. So it's been a bit of a process, but I think it's been very promising. I think, you know, already the first race out, we qualified in the top six, and we actually done that twice already. So it's been a very good start. The results haven't really come with us, but it's been promising. And I know the team has done a ton of effort into preparing our Speedway cars for the month of May. So I'm excited to get out and try them here in a week or so. And you know, just to drive for the Andretti name, right? That's just very cool in itself. It's such a legendary name, and that family, and, you know, Michael and Mario and you know, all of them. So that's obviously something that's super, super cool, and I'm very proud of.
Marcus Ericsson with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline, trying to get his second Indy 500 here in a few weeks. What is that moment like when you cross the finish line and you've won the Indy 500? And then, you know, I would imagine you got to be chomping at the bit to get back. How much work do you feel you're going to have to do in these next few weeks to be ready for the Indy 500 here in a couple weekends?
I mean, it's the biggest race in the world. So I think, you know, it's the race that everyone dreams all their life of winning. And I think the good thing for me now is that I know what I need to do to win it. And I know what I need to have from the car to win it. So that's what I'm going to try and use these next few weeks. So, you know, it's all about preparing for that race day and for that end of a race. So I always say that this month of May, the key word for me is patience. It's about building up every day, getting better every day, and being there on race day and being able to deliver. So patience will be the key word to victory.
He now calls Indy home. Again, Andretti IndyCar driver, the number 28 Delaware Life Honda. You hear the voice of Marcus Ericsson with us right now. Marcus, what's the most tense moment of an Indy 500?
Probably the qualifying, to be honest. Qualifying weekend and doing that qualifying run, the four laps flat out. And I was last year, 2:34 was pole position average speed. That's probably the most intense. When you come to race day, I think everything, you know, the start is obviously pretty crazy in many ways. When you see all the fans, you do the salutes, you know, going around on the parade laps. That's a very intense moment as well, because you know, you just want to sort of get the race going, and then you sort of get into your rhythm. But for me, you know, every day at the Speedway is a special day, and then I always try and enjoy them as much as possible.
All right, we got a video up on our website. Jake Query came to your house. I'm shocked that you let Jake inside, frankly, there.
Wow.
So kudos to you for that philanthropic effort. You and your wife now call Indianapolis home. What are maybe some favorite spots for the Ericsson couple to check out here in Indy?
Yeah, I mean, we live on the north side, so we like to go up to Carmel and you know, hang out there at some good restaurants. And to be fair, Monon is probably my favorite. You know, I go a lot to runs and walks and on my bike on the Monon. So, yeah, that's some of my favorite things to do. And then, yeah, go watch some Pacers games, obviously.
Well, he is still pissed off about last year, and universally he's pissed off with all of us here.
You're
on this
right.
Tuesday morning, so we all can agree on that. And frankly, I think there are a lot of people that probably agree with you, Marcus, on how last year ended. Hopefully we do not have that sort of drama. Great drama, but hopefully not that type of drama here coming up in 2.5 weeks. Marcus, have a safe month, man. Good luck this weekend, and certainly we'll be rooting for you here coming up for the 500.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.